Wondering where you can get the latest news and reviews from the world of paranormal entertainment? Frank and Laura take a look at the latest happenings and break down what's new on TV and at the movies each week on Spooktacular, your paranormal entertainment roundup. Check them out by searching for Spooktacular in iTunes or head on over to Spooktacular.com. Oh yeah, be sure to bring along a friend because no one should listen alone.
Paranormal investigation groups all over the world are looking for answers. We all clamor at the chance to get even the tiniest peek at who or what is on the other side. CPR, or Cooperative for Paranormal Research, is one of these groups. We are dedicated to finding the answers, dedicated to finding evidence of the paranormal, and dedicated to proving that some places are truly haunted.
recent experience where I strongly believe that I encountered a shadow person.
When I looked, it was January 5th, 2046.
I just, you know, I want to find an explanation for it. I want to rule it out as, you know, something that was logical.
There are many things we have yet to learn about and understand. Join us here at Supernatural Existence and learn about the many mysteries of the universe. Feel free to subscribe via any of your favorite podcast directories, including iTunes, or check us out on the Supernatural Existence website at www.globeye.com. The mysteries are waiting to be understood.
I really want to see something supernatural with my own eyes. Not hear it or think I heard it or anything like that. Actually see it with my own eyes, capture it on camera. Hear something weird or something like that.
You're listening to Ghostly Talk.
Jason Valenti is a resident of Bellingham, Washington. He was introduced to the Bigfoot Sasquatch phenomenon in 1996, one spring morning at 4 a.m. in the Apalachicola National Forest near Tallahassee, Florida. That's pretty much when I would be out and about in the forest. Since that moment, he has been driven to find out more about this elusive species. He moved from Largo, Florida to Bellingham, Washington in 1999. Why would anybody move from Florida to Washington? We're going to have to ask him that. In the 8 years of residency, he has discovered some very interesting areas in the Pacific Northwest that he frequents with several other researchers. His research has led him into the same areas that Lloyd Pye has tapped into, and he is in the process of writing a book and developing a foundation called the Hominoid Research Group for the Further Studies of Hominoids. We would like to welcome... the website.
Yeah,
The website is SasquatchResearch.net. And, of course, that'll be linked up at Ghostly Talk.
Permanently.
GhostlyTalk.com permanently. Mm-hmm. And now we have to welcome Jason Valenti to the show.
Hey, thank you very much for having me on the show today.
Why the heck did you move for? Doug wants to know.
I was Florida. You were in the closest.
You had it made. You were home free.
The closest thing to heaven. That's where we went this past late winter. Bonnie and I had to escape Michigan because we have we don't have as much rain, I guess, as Washington, but we have, you know, cold and
miserable
and
weather
and stuff in the winter. So we escaped to what we thought would be. And what was pretty much heaven on earth, Florida.
Mm-hmm. It really was.
And you went the other way. You went from gorgeous weather, even in the end of January, beginning of February, early March, to Washington. Other than to be close to Bigfoot, I can't think of any other reason.
Why did you move?
Well, believe it or not, well, I mean, the main reason is because of Bigfoot. That's obviously, I didn't have anybody to communicate with, really, when I was there. Just very few people would even listen to me talk about it because I thought it was so crazy. And I knew that I needed to get up into an area that, had much more of a frequency of sightings.
Yeah.
And so since I've been here, I mean, you literally can walk up to almost anybody on the streets up here. And just start a conversation about Bigfoot with a total stranger. And usually eight out of ten people will kind of look both ways to make sure no one sees them. And then they'll lean in and say, well, you know, it's funny that you're telling me this because my Uncle Jack back in 1964 was up here over on Sumas Mountain. It always starts off like something like that. It's really funny. So I feel very at home here regarding that aspect of it. But also, too, I'm kind of built for the mountains anyway. I grew up in Florida from the age I was 6 till, I guess, how old was I, 29 when I left. And I while the beaches are gorgeous, you know, if you're loaded and you're wealthy and you can spend time on the coasts of Florida and kind of just be on eternal vacation, then that's great. But I'm really much more of a mountain person. I like to be up in the mountainous areas of North America. So, and plus this place is gorgeous too. It's got its own beauty.
Oh, yeah.
Just as much as Florida does, too.
Oh, yeah.
Well, that's true. Oh, I'm not knocking the Pacific Northwest.
Oh, yes, you were, Doug.
No, I'm just saying. Florida.
Florida, are you crazy? I imagine if you spend, you know, a good chunk of your life in one place, even Florida, you're going to go, man, I need a change of scenery.
Well, I do know somebody who used to live right pretty much dead center in the middle of the, you know, continental United States, you know, not near any oceans or huge lakes or anything like that. And her drive was to move, I think she was driven more to the East Coast. She wanted to move to the East Coast
mm-hmm.
to be near, you know, the Atlantic Ocean.
Yeah,
she just
water.
It pulled her. It calls to her. It's part of, you know, she just felt she should have always been born and lived there.
Mm-hmm.
And I sort of lost touch with her because of all that internet stuff happened. But I wonder if she ever made it, you know. But evidently, Jason made it out to the Pacific Northwest where the Bigfoot sightings are indeed extremely well reported out there.
Yeah, and they're in bulk too, from what I understand. Now, to launch things off there, I got to ask you this. This is one thing that was mentioned is, you know, usually we hear the term hominid used when it comes to Bigfoot, but you're using the term hominoid. Now, could you explain what the difference may be and why you choose to use the term hominoid for a Sasquatch?
Love to explain that one. The distinction basically comes from Lloyd Pye, whom you guys are probably familiar with, who's
mm-hmm.
the author
mm-hmm.
of everything. He also does the Star Child Project. Lloyd and I have been pretty good friends since his book came out back in late 97, early 98. And for years, he kept on correcting me and tried to get me to change my thinking, because if you really look at what has been labeled as the pre-humans, and we're talking about all the Australopithecines, and from when you make the transition from Australopithecines to the early Homos leading up to Homo neanderthalensis, they, for all intents and purposes, when you break it down, really look like upright walking primates.
Mm-hmm.
Humans are in a completely different classification anatomically and morphologically. So I believe that we really need to identify everything that has been labeled as a prehumans as hominoids, because they're human-like, but they're not human.
Mm-hmm.
You know, they've even proven recently that the most, you know, the nearest relative supposed to us does not have the same DNA as us. So we couldn't have quote evolved from them. So I think it's important to make that distinction for those reasons.
Well, now, as we know, the Sasquatch, the sightings have been seen. They walk upright. They swing their arms back and forth when they're walking, like we do, right? They seem to have a lot of the same trait characteristics, like, you know, that's been mentioned. I'm wondering if the term the missing link comes up, obviously. I mean, what's your opinion on that?
Well, that was the first question to enter my mind when I first saw it. I mean, mm-hmm. having been raised as a good old-fashioned fundamentalist Christian in the United States, you know, the version of Christianity that we have in the U.S., I was discouraged from ever thinking or believing that there was ever such thing as a missing link, because that would have meant that we would have had to evolve, and most of the Christianity in our country believes that the world's been created in 6,000 years and God did everything and created us and we didn't come from monkeys or anything like that. So that was the first question that popped in my mind, because I did notice that there were some similarities, of which the hands were the most disturbing thing. I mean, when I saw hands in my headlights, I was like, wait a minute, it's a primate though. It doesn't look that human, but the human characteristics were is that it was upright on two legs and that its hands were similar looking to me. Everything else anatomically was very, very different. And when you study primates, hair patterns are totally different. There are many morphological differences between primates and humans, so much so that that's why I say that it really needs to be distinct, and that we call them hominoids and we call us hominids. When you really break us down morphologically and compare the skeletons, our skin, our hair, our nails, the shape of our teeth, the capacity for our brains and our skulls, the shape of our skulls, there is really a light year separation in the characteristics of our bodies compared to theirs.
Well, if along those lines, if Because all we have right now that I know of, I don't think we have an actual Bigfoot skull or skeleton to study.
We actually do.
Oh, we do?
We've all seen them in school. That's the prehumans.
Oh, okay.
And when I say that to people, it's kind of shocking because most people have never thought of that. You know, Gigantopithecus,
mm-hmm.
Any of the Australopithecines, you know, we've all seen them, Australopithecus afarensis, Australopithecus boise, Homo ergaster. We've heard of the Cro-Magnon skulls. Well, Cro-Magnon's actually been classified as more modern human. But, you know, we've actually seen, for all intents and purposes, we've all seen evidence of Bigfoots or Sasquatches in our school books growing up as children, being taught about the prehumans, who are supposed to be extinct. Then why do we have thousands of reports every year on every continent of people seeing what are described as upright walking primates in every characteristic you can think of?
Right. Well, if the things that we're unearthing, that, you know, they go and they find some glacier or whatever that melts, and they find, you know, another set of bones or something like that. If we find all these things what I can't get yet is how come a few of them then seem to have some kind of either extremely long life and are able to scare, you know, some people who are out walking through the woods, or how come they have such incredible survival and camouflage?
They're very elusive. Yeah,
they are elusive. So how can they live among us yet not, you know, not be hit by a car and then dragged, you know, because, you know, you had said you saw it in your headlights. Why couldn't it be hit by a car and then, oh my gosh, the sheriff takes it off and then every scientist from all over the world,
gets their piece.
Gets their bit of it.
Mm-hmm.
Those are very good questions, and those are probably some of the best questions that anyone could ask of this.
Oh.
And I have a couple of answers for that. Number one, if you just on a anatomical and morphological basis, look at what humans do to survive on this planet. We move into an area, we stay in packs, we mow everything down, you know, that's in an area, take down the trees, the forest, set up agricultural areas, and we don't live in the forests and the jungles of the world mostly. I mean, and if we do, we hollow out spots for us to survive and to thrive, and that's how we do our thing to live. Hominoids, if you look at them, for the way that they're built morphologically, they are equipped with everything that they need to live in a very hostile environment. They can live in extreme temperatures. They're covered with hair, and plus they have melanin in their skin to protect them from the sun. The orbital sockets for their eyeballs are extremely huge to accommodate night vision. They literally, 24 hours a day, can do anything it takes to survive. The speed and natural strength of all primates, and I would have to include Sasquatch or Bigfoot into this category, because we do know that almost every primate alive right now, when you compare its natural strength to humans, it's somewhere on the order of between 10 to 15 times that of a human.
Mm-hmm.
I remember one time working out in a gym when I was a teenager, and this little tiny monkey, I mean, it was less than 6 pounds, little tiny guy, got loose out of the cage. It jumped and leaped from machine to machine until it finally landed on a greased pole where the plates slide up and down for this cable crossover machine.
Yeah.
The owner, who had the bench press record for the 50-year-old class, could not remove the monkey off of a greased pole. It was that strong. Its little arms were no bigger than around my pinky, but it had so much natural strength, it was able to actually hold on to a greasy pole, and the guy put his foot up on the thing and pulled with everything that he had and could not remove this 6-pound monkey off of the bar. That's just an illustration. It's been said that, you know, gorillas, like silverback gorillas, have a bench press equivalent of like 4,000 pounds.
Mm.
Well, I think the strongest human there is that has had it on record, who has probably been on steroids, I think is in the 700-pound range, maybe.
Yeah.
And we're talking about a guy who's been training and, you know. So my whole point is that they're equipped to live in the environment, and they usually live in forests and jungles. They come out mostly at night. They're nocturnal creatures. From most of our research points to that they mostly do a lot of their foraging at night. That's not to say that they don't do it during the day. Their sleep cycles are probably extremely short, and they probably split it between night and day. So most of the sightings that we have occur on the edges of human civilization. You know, it's always on the periphery. It's always like in the forest line, exactly where I had my sighting. It was 15 miles outside of Tallahassee in Apalachicola National Forest. So most of the reports that I've taken a look at, it always seems to place them, you know, on the edges of forests and jungles.
Well,
you're not going to see them. You're not going to spot them running down, you know, Main Street in any, you know, small town USA. It's not going to happen. They know that they need to stay away from us because typically we go after them. I do have, and the answer to the second part of the question is that there had to have been dead bodies. There's no question that there has been. I have a couple of researcher colleagues up here who are much older than me. One of them pulled me aside one time and said that there was an incident that took place on a very close military base here where two hominoids were killed, and they were on their way to Grover Krantz's place, and the flatbed tractor trailer was intercepted by a black Lexus halfway in between Fort Lewis and Seattle. And the driver said, look, all I know is that this car motioned me over. I pulled over, and these guys in suits came out and said, thank you very much, we'll take it from here. Now, I wasn't there to experience myself, but this comes from a source that I very highly trust. So either – and this is why it rolls right into other areas of research like Sitchin's work, because I'm of the extremely strong opinion that what we might be dealing with here is that this missing link may be the missing link to a story on the origins of humanity that is so huge that there might be a cover-up intentionally, you know, in place to keep us from finding out about these creatures, because it will lead to the beginnings of where we came from.
Well,
as crazy as that sounds, and
no,
as much
sound
as that sounds like Star Wars.
No,
no, I've heard...
the show's called Ghostly Talk for a reason.
Yeah, we've heard... No, this is actually really interesting.
No, it's very interesting.
It does put a lot of interesting things in perspective.
Mm-hmm.
You know, why Nevada?
Well, yeah, well, it seems like, we talk to other people who study Bigfoot and the Sasquatch and whatnot, and they're like, they're just an animal like anything else is, right? Well, if they're just an animal, why is there this big deal over this one creature then? Why can't, you've already asked these questions, obviously, why can't we find one of these things? Why can't we find one dead? Why can't we do this? You know, there's all this elusiveness and mystery around this creature, and this is an interesting way to, this is an interesting idea you have, Jason.
Well, I totally get, I absolutely get that, you know, they're a lot better adapted to the, you know, the forest and
mm-hmm.
And staying elusive. I mean, that's what they've had to do to survive in, you know, the age of humans, right? And they've learned this.
Well,
and they've done it, and they've perfected it.
Mm-hmm.
I get it. And then, but then, when you add on top of that, the idea of, okay, if something does go awry, there's the cover-up, the conspiracy, the we can't let this get out.
Yeah, what these things
thing.
Really are.
That would definitely keep it off of CNN.
The elusiveness thing, too, you know, and this ties into not just other, you know, to just the Sasquatch or the hominoid in specifics. For example, Tom and I were hiking yesterday in the woods, right? And a couple months ago, Tom actually saw what he thought was a false water cobra, which is not native to Michigan.
Right.
It's a cobra, and he was walking down the trail, and he saw this snake that had the markings like a false water cobra and all this stuff, and I'm like, there's no way you could have seen that thing. It's not. And sure enough, he did some more research on it and found out it was a hognose snake.
Okay.
That has the same markings as a false water cobra, right? And they're very easy to spot if you can actually see one. And as we were walking yesterday, it was in the back of my mind. I'm like, keep your eyes out like Steve Irwin and keep looking around here and see if you can find one of these things, because they're harmless. They're rear fanged. If they bite you, they can't hurt you. So I was going to actually pick one up and hold them and go, hey, buddy, why don't you get all pissed off at me?
Yeah.
But I was going to pick them up. And darn it, I mean, even with a keen eye, I mean, I was watching, and I know a little bit more about snakes than most people do. So I can kind of, I've seen them before. I've been able to you know, track them and see them. Not like I'm, again, I'm not like, you know, wild adventurer guy here, but I spent 3 hours in that forest and couldn't find one snake.
Right.
Right? So my point is they're as elusive as the hominoid is, the Sasquatch is, right?
I think what you're experiencing, Jason, is a couple of very excited talk show hosts. Because
it makes sense, though, to me.
Fitting,
it makes sense to me.
We're essentially fitting what you've just presented into our worldviews, and it does make sense.
It makes a lot of sense.
Kind of scary, actually.
Why would you?
The prospect of it is terrifying when you first hear it, and believe me, the place that I do not want to go is into conspiracy theory. But the more and more I dug into this, you know, I had a background in Hebrew and Greek. You know, I went to Oral Roberts University. I studied to be a minister. I could navigate my way through ancient languages to the degree that I needed to see that the theory reinterpretation that Sitchin proposed in 1976 with his book, The Twelfth Planet, which, you know, he basically sprung from the platform that Von Daniken was, you know, coming from, the Chariots of the Gods, talking about ancient astronaut theory.
Yeah, yeah.
Well, Sitchin was able to take the cuneiform tablets that were discovered in the 1890s and reinterpret them, because they got thrown in the myth pile with the Egyptian, Greek, and the Roman mythology. Mm-hmm. Because it just sounds too fantastic. How can people back then know this kind of stuff? How could they have charts of our solar system? And what were these creatures they were talking about? Hairy ape men being genetically engineered with an advanced civilization? It sounds like Star Wars. It sounds like you're talking about a modern day sci-fi movie.
Mm-hmm.
But the more and more I kept researching into this, I spent the last 13 years of my life just digging into this, and I'm like, my God, this is not pretty. This is really effed up.
Yeah.
And I don't want this to be true. I mean, believe me, I would love to believe. My mom and I have had conversations about this. I want to believe that the earth was made 6,000 years ago and that we were walking in the Garden of Eden with God and we got to name all the animals and it was all romantic and all wonderful and all we got to do is just do the salvation thing and everything's great and life will be eternally playing harps and some golden cloud city and I'll be protected. Everything will be wonderful. It's just all a bed of roses. The more I dig into this because of my experience in seeing hominoids, the more I see that the history and the genesis of the human race is really, really ugly, and people aren't going to want to believe in it because it is so terrifying.
Well, okay, I guess we'll go ahead, Doug.
Well, follow the money. Well, in this case, there's probably not much money, but who would have something to gain by keeping such knowledge from us and interpreting things incorrectly? Because if Zachary Sitchin got it right with his interpretation,
yeah,
right, or if he's close, I mean, because who knows, really, who would gain from doing it wrong, through misinformation or you know, ignorance, doing it wrong and keeping the knowledge of Bigfoot and its link to hominids and what it means to us and our history. Who would gain from it, and what would they gain?
Well, in order to answer that question, I have to say this. I don't believe that everything that Sitchin says is absolutely true. I think the theme of what he is proposing is probably correct, and that is that this world was seeded from an advanced civilization. I think that much is true. I believe, because of my own personal experience and knowing that there are hominoids that still exist on the planet, that it has led me to believe that, okay, if what Sitchin is saying is true and that the Anunnaki came here, you guys are familiar with that term?
Oh, yeah. Absolutely.
Okay. So the Anunnaki come here. They create the human race. They become so unmanageable because of the population growth. The population density of humans just it outnumbers them. Because as far as we know, even Lawrence Gardner has done research on the genealogy of the Anunnaki, and it appears that they are in much smaller numbers than us. Like, they have huge lifespans, and we have shorter lifespans, but we can reproduce in larger numbers. They have a larger population. So there needed to be a secret society created within the human race that had a little bit more of the DNA of the Anunnaki in them, so that they would be the rulers of us. Now, I think you're going to start seeing the picture coalesce here, because what would happen is, who would stand to gain from this is that it is the secret societies that were set into motion from the beginning. The kings and the queens, the ones who have always been the rulers, why these ruling families try to keep everything within their realm, is they're the ones that stand to lose because they want to keep us under control. Well, if we know the truth of how we got here, we wouldn't listen. We would be like, F you, I'm going to do my own thing. We're all equal, all is love, and we should all be cooperating with one another to make life better for everyone. It's not that, oh, you know, your skin's whiter, so you deserve to have more and rule over me and strip my power. That is what this whole thing is about, is the creation of the caste system, in my opinion. I mean, I really believe that if what the Sumerian texts have clues in there for us to decipher means is, wow, we were kind of genetically a case that was trying to get discarded from the Anunnaki. And the maker, you know, Ninhursag and Enki, the two who are supposed to be responsible for creating the human race, they obviously wanted for us to survive. The other people that were part of the Anunnaki were like, well, they're just like the redheaded stepchild. We don't really want to give them energy because they're not even 100% us, kind of like a bastard child.
Yeah.
So therefore, it's only the purebloods that get all of the benefit and all the wealth and all the attention and all the glory and all the honor. We're kind of like, you know, a second-rate hybrid that was kind of let loose on our own. But, unfortunately, within our own race of heritage, there is another race, which are the kings and queens that rule this planet. These secret societies that David Icke talks about, I think that religion is the perfect tool to control everybody. Given this illusion that there is this God out there, this monotheistic God, and that if you don't obey him, you're going to go to hell and all this stuff, and it's the perfect thing to control everybody, is to keep that religion in full force forever. Whereas if someone like me comes along and, you know, oh, I just saw this thing. I didn't know it existed. Oh, it leads me to these ancient writings. And I just start deciphering everything. And then as a result of seeing all that information, I become empowered. And I'm like, wait a minute, this whole world's messed up. You know, we all should be more cooperative and not be trying to stealing from each other. And that's kind of like the place that I'm coming from. That's what this information did to me. And that's why I think it's important to get this information out there, so that people can see that, you know, there might be this huge cover-up of how we were created, so that we can continually be controlled, so that this secret society gets the benefit, because they'll always, you know, be able to use us as a resource to get their resources.
I understand people's need to control things, right? Mm-hmm. I see that every day when I go to work or when I read the news, you know, that kind of thing. I understand that, and I understand that there are some people who consider themselves different or better, you know, and therefore entitled, right?
Yeah.
But after literally, you know, it's been thousands of years, and I don't personally agree with the 6,000-year theory. It's been thousands of years that people have been ruling other people, and whether it be of a village or of a kingdom or of a continent in some cases, that people have been, you know, putting other people up on pedestals and saying, you are our king or you are our queen or you are our emperor, whatever, and then they go, I want to conquer more, and they go conquer. You know, I mean, I understand the history, but what does being part or closer to Anunnaki, right, nowadays mean to the ruling classes? I mean, it doesn't seem to be anything when there's literally, well, there's a billion people in China and India. There's, you know, hundreds of millions in the United States.
There's 6 billion on the planet right now. There's a lot of people.
So, but what does it get them? Like, do they get better? I mean, I can go out and buy the best tea on the planet and enjoy that tea, right? Sure, nobody would bring it to me, but, I mean, it's a simple pleasure. I can't think, like, do they Does somebody comb individual hairs on their body? I mean, I don't see what the big advantage is. I mean, I don't think, for example, that Bill Gates, who has tons and tons of money, right?
Mm-hmm.
I think that every day he wakes up and puts his feet on the floor and probably visits the lavatory and then brushes his teeth and then, you know, gets dressed in more expensive clothes than I do, mm-hmm. you know, and then goes about his day and then until later, and then he does the opposite and goes to bed. And, mm-hmm. you know, I don't see, to me, I just don't see an advantage of being closer to Anunnaki than the masses, and why that would automatically grant them a free pass at being the ruler. Yet.
That's an excellent point. But see, what you're saying is that this is I have sparked a question in your mind as
yes.
a result of telling you,
exactly.
you know, what I know. And when you keep asking questions, it leads to more questions because it doesn't make any sense. And I really believe in order to make sense of this thing, you literally have to climb in to the psychology or what you think would be the psychology of an advanced civilization that has literally almost conquered everything and every challenge, so that they become so bored with existence that they actually start to create drama that doesn't make any sense. And as crazy as that sounds, that is the conclusion that I have come to. Let's take Bill Gates for instance. He's never going to have the concerns in his lifetime that you and I face.
Right.
Because he has superseded that.
Right.
He has transcended the you know, the TikTok go to get a 9-to-5 job. He's beyond that. So what he is probably occupying his time with is challenges that are so far above and beyond the average person that we couldn't even imagine what it would be like. We can't even imagine what is going on in his head, because he doesn't have to be consumed with the cares of this world like the common folk that live, you know, in the rural areas and in the cities, who take up 9-to-5 jobs or whatever they're doing to exist. I really believe that it's so evident when you really start to look at what it would be like if you really didn't have to care or worry about your needs, like your food and your water and all that. If you had a way, if you were able to use your mind, and you would literally just think of creative ways to use unlimited resources. I think you would lose sight of compassion as well. And I think that this race of beings lost sight of compassion, and it was more of like an experimental thing. Okay, we're on planet Earth. Let's see what we can whip up. You know, I mean, literally, as queer as that sounds, I think that a lot of that kind of psychodynamic plays in the behavior that has impacted us as a species.
Well, we definitely behave in the same way with a lot of different things. I mean, below us, I think that the humanoid, we as humans, we do that with a lot of things that we consider lower than us, such as like insects and rodents and things like that. Most people look at them things as their dirt. I mean, and most people I know are like, they see a spider and they're stomping them out. They're killing them.
Oh, I run screaming.
Well, yeah, Doug, you're the glowing example of that. But I mean, you treat them in a different way. I mean, whereas me, I'm a bit more of a hippie when it comes to that stuff. I'm like, hey, a spider ain't doing anything wrong to you. Let him do his thing. He's cool. You know, I can understand people being scared of him.
I want to hit it with my car.
But we treat him that way. We treat him like over and over again.
What I understand about the Bill Gates thing, transcending our day-to-day needs, right? I love that analogy. I absolutely do, because I tried to leap myself into winning the $252 million in the there's a game called the Mega Millions and the upcoming Tuesday thing. What would I do if I won? Well, I think that, you know, obviously, you know, my concerns would change. I wouldn't be concerned about, okay, I have to, you know, pay my cell phone bill on this day at this time. The mortgage, there's all these different things, the car payment, all these things that would completely, you know, go off my shoulders. But what would all of a sudden go onto my shoulders would be security.
Oh, yeah.
All of a sudden, you know, I would not want I don't want 1,000 people around me, you know, with their hands out right now. I don't have even $1,000 to give each one a single dollar. But if I'm not even a thousandaire yet.
Rub a couple of niggas together. What are you talking about?
Ghostly Talk does not pay that much.
Yep.
So I don't want 1,000 people around me all with their hands out saying, you know, you can help, my story. And I wouldn't want that either if suddenly I had some kind of windfall or if I worked hard enough to be there and have that in the bank. I would suddenly leap to security.
Mm-hmm.
Not that I would guard my secrets, but I would want to guard my body and my family.
I will be your bodyguard.
Well, then I'm all set. I just have to live in Orlando, Florida.
Again. Yes.
Somewhere
right
near the Disney park.
Near
yes.
Disney World.
Exactly.
Well, you're safe.
What's being said here is that
my concerns would change, and they would leap away from day-to-day things like we have to security.
Well, yeah.
Not necessarily secrecy, but I wouldn't want people to know, you know, ooh, there's going to be this multimillionaire, you know, over here and then over there, and we can pitch this idea, that idea.
Yeah.
We can, you know, perhaps kidnap him. I don't know what they would want to do because the world is full of things, but I would suddenly leap to security. Now,
yeah.
If I did consider myself from a superior race, right,
mm-hmm.
I imagine security would be important.
And, absolutely.
And that ties directly in with the, I know we're shying away from conspiracy theory, but
yeah.
That would directly tie in with, I don't want these people to learn our secrets.
Yeah.
Exactly.
Otherwise,
yeah.
We're going to be put up on a stand in front of a billion people, or 6 billion people, or however many, and they're gonna torture us until we tell all the secrets. It's too much to explain, you know, these... You know, and just like I don't want a spider to wrap me in a cocoon and suck out my juices, which is what they want to do to me.
I love you,
yeah.
Doug.
I know that most spiders are probably like, oh, he's too big. You know, I couldn't possibly do it.
Well,
but I don't want 6 billion of them to come at me,
uh-huh.
Right? Well, same thing if you consider yourself from a superior race, that you created these things, and then they're gonna string you up. So I see security as being important to them, too. So I do see a line in there that's something that they are protecting.
Well, that's what this hominoid represents, though, is, again, just to kind of get us back on, we've been on track, but, I mean, that's what this hominoid represents,
yeah.
Though, is these secrets, these things that they don't want us to know about, and that's why they're so, I mean, probably based on this idea, Jason, the ones that have actually been found, like this, you relayed a story already about that. They found a couple, and they were killed.
And they took off
them.
In a black Lexus. Yeah,
and they took them. So.
I don't blame them. Is the church?
I'm pretty sure there's been in the last 60 years at least a dozen hominoids killed or found dead in this country,
mm-hmm.
that never made it to the media. The one that I can think of that did make it for a period of time was the Minnesota Iceman.
Mm-hmm.
And Lloyd Pye talks about that because he got to see that, and he was convinced, along with Ivan T. Sanderson, who was the eminent zoologist of his time, who got to spend 3 days with it, said that it was a hominoid, period. And so while there is evidence when you start digging, you know, as with the advent of informational technology that we have today, we're getting really good at discussing this kind of stuff. I mean, here we are sharing on the radio in 1 hour. We're getting this information out to a broad range of people.
Oh, yeah.
And everybody's taking it into their mind and kicking it around and regurgitating it and refining it and then coming up with even more questions and being inspired to do more research and network with other people. And this whole, you know, the whole top is blown off of this thing as a result of things like the internet and telephone and, you know, just different types of communication platforms that have been created in the last 100 years. So I think that this is really an amazing gift that we have now, is that we're starting to really understand and put things into perspective like we've never been able to before.
Well, I'm looking at this hour as, first of all, I'm on the edge of my seat. I'm
it wasn't
really
what I expected to talk about.
No, me either. No,
no,
I read the list of topics to discuss, and I've just totally gone away. I'm that excited. But I'm looking at this hour as an entire list of reasons to read your book when you publish it, Jason, because it's like you have all this fascinating, you know, you have a decade and a half or more of all this research that you've had to think about this stuff and to put it together, and, mm-hmm. and I've only had scant minutes, and I'm thankful for them because they're making my wheels turn,
yeah.
you know, and I'm really thinking.
Well, let's throw this into the pot. I mean, we haven't mind-bended ourselves enough. Ufology. Is there some type of connection between this and the hominoid?
Oh, don't get me started on that one. if you want a foundational bedrock for ufology, this is it, fellas and ladies. It absolutely, because if you think about it, if what is being purported in the cuneiform tablets, we have our first abduction, we have our first genetic experiment with aliens on native species of this planet. There, as a result, becomes a hybrid. We're talking 250,000 years ago, and you don't think that you don't think that the Anunnaki are still here? They're still here. They're probably in the South Pole, right dead smack in the middle of it, in some kind of a igloo type structure, mm-hmm. and just gently managing what's going on. You know, steering the economic, social, and political systems of our world. They're still here. They're probably on the other side of the moon. They're probably on Mars. They've probably got little bases here and there. You know, and I talk to people in ufology, and, you know, they're wanting to run zippity-doo-dah back and forth between the Arcturians and the Pleiadians and the whatever else is out there. And, like, we're dealing with thousands of intergalactic people are coming here and abducting everybody. And I'm like, what if it's just the Anunnaki?
Mm-hmm.
You know, what? You know, I think we need to start with them. I mean, we have 6,000-year-old clay tablets, dozens and thousands of them, that have this story. Or should I say report of what they observed, and I think that the whole ufology thing, a lot of it can be explained through just the knowledge of hominoids and their relationship to us. I think that's huge.
Well, it is. I mean, see, I'm trying to get my mind around this whole thing again. I mean, this is all, as far as we're talking, I mean, this is all going back to the hominoid. And this seems like a whole huge, huge, huge scale of things, and we're talking about existence now, pretty much going back to the hominoid.
Yeah, we can talk on this whole thing and how I could tie everything. I literally could stay on the phone on the show for literally days. It's that much information. Here we are trying to compress it all in just less than 60 minutes.
Yeah.
I mean, it's huge. It should be on the 6 o'clock news every night, as far as I'm concerned.
Well, and again, I mean.
Well, a lot of people do want to understand the past,
yeah.
right? They want to understand, you know, what happened.
What the hell is so wrong?
Are we, you know, are we an experiment from the Anunnaki? Are we, you know, did a bearded god on a cloud create us and then or create Adam and then take a rib and make Eve, right? Were the dinosaurs knocked out and then all of a sudden you know, a happy accident happened and humans appear, you know.
Right.
But so what exactly did happen? A lot of people are going to fight about this for a very, very long time.
Absolutely.
But what I'm interested in then, I mean, logically, you know, I'm sure that I absolutely can't wait until you write and finish that book and publish it, because I will be reading that immediately, because that'll help explain a lot of, because I can ask you questions, like you said, for a week. And
sure.
And I may or may not, you know, come to the moment where, oh,
well,
I understand.
Why is it over and over again? I'm sorry, I didn't mean to interrupt you, Doug, but I mean, this has to be asked. Why is it over and over again when we hear about stuff like this? That it does come down to, well, they don't want you to know this stuff, because if you knew this, you'd know better, and then their power base would be completely removed. I mean, that's the only reason that they can be...
Well, that ties in with the question that I was going to ask.
Okay, I'm
is
sorry.
What about the future? Like, what if... Assuming we've got, you know, Anunnaki, you know, close to Anunnaki or actual Anunnaki, you know, monitoring, controlling, doing all this stuff. They are the keepers of this experiment. Assuming we have that, right?
Uh-huh.
The problem is they must be scared, because we do communicate with each other. We do create technology.
We do
all these interesting things that they must both find fascinating and also scary at the same time, because we're talking on this show. We're exchanging information and discussing history and our very origins. And so we're also going to discuss now for just a few minutes, because I've already eaten up almost a whole hour.
Yeah.
The future. What are they afraid of? Could we ascend or whatever, or become like Buddha or whoever does the transcendental.
Become better than them, bigger than them, more powerful than them.
Or are we by design limited?
Those are excellent questions. I absolutely love these questions, and these are the things that need to be sent to a think tank to really think this thing through. But you have to think about it in the context of believing that everything we just discussed in the last 45 plus minutes could be possible and probably did happen. So therefore, the way I would answer that question based on my limited knowledge so far would be that while they might still exist, what we would have to do is to be able to confront them and say, look, we want to break apart from you, because obviously for us to integrate into your society would not work. You've already proven that to us by mistreating us to the degree that you've had. So therefore, either we need to have an amicable relationship where you can pay us to mine resources for you, whatever form that comes in, and then we will have our independence to do our own thing. And maybe we can work out a mutually beneficial relationship where we can trade technology and we can provide, you know, all the precious metals or whatever the hell they get from us, you know, and have to approach it from that perspective, because we're going to have to grow up at some point. You know, all these things that are going on in the world with these wars over religion. I mean, wars are being started over the question of the existence of God. Oh, you don't believe my way? I'm going to shoot you in the face.
Oh, yeah.
How juvenile and ridiculous is that? No, we're better than that. We can send people into space, for God's sakes, with our own crude missile technology. So we have got to work on developing and sharpening our negotiation skills, our own educational platforms, you know, that we're using to equip the minds of every generation coming behind the next one. And I believe it's possible for us to really develop into an amazing species that would be capable of space travel and being able to utilize technology and to be friendly with each other. I mean, I don't think it's in our nature. I don't think it's in human nature to be as hostile as people think it is. I think a lot of what we see in the world is training and damage that has been inflicted on us, and we're just acting out. And if we were shown a loving and empowering way to make different choices, it would completely transform the very nature of the way we operate. Mm-hmm. And we could become an incredibly sophisticated and empowering society.
Well, what you mentioned a few minutes ago about possibly making an agreement with the Anunnaki and saying, It sounds much like the birth of America to me. I mean, we did this.
Yeah, I mean, literally it does.
We're breaking off of England here. We're tired of you. We want to do our own thing here. We're tired of your control. We're going to have our own country now, right? And it sounds very similar to that. When you were saying that, all I thought of was the birth of this nation that we're doing this show from right now. And
absolutely.
It's an amazing, what's the word I'm looking for, Doug? It's just very similar. I mean,
sure.
It's amazing parallel, you mean.
Yeah, parallel.
But it's only a 200-year parallel versus,
we're talking literally God knows how many years.
You know, thousands and thousands of years. But the, 200 years and we've really, really messed up the country, I think. But, what are you going to do?
Yeah.
I don't know. If you
really
introduce another topic, my mind is going to burst.
It's a lot to think about.
Yes, Jason Valenti, your website is SasquatchResearch.net. You're working on, you're in the process of writing a book, and I know that'll take time, because it always does. Because we know Amber Rose worked on hers and got it. It's in printing now. And so we know it takes time and effort and dedication. And I wish you all the luck in the world with that, because I want to read it. To peer
absolutely
into the mind of Jason Valenti would be a wonderful fireside treat for me. And I might actually, understand more than you could ever get out in an hour. Of course, the website SasquatchResearch.net, and also the Hominoid Research Group that you're forming. You're really, really getting, getting it together and starting to, put it out there and hope. I just hope that this hour will help some folks.
Start thinking about this.
Start thinking about this and maybe contact you or and subscribe to the things on the website and just get, you know, get in there and start thinking about this stuff. Our origins, our future, everything is mm-hmm. it can be linked. And it's another example of somehow it all seems to tie together.
Oh, God, yeah.
And that's something we've noticed in the 7 years of doing Ghostly Talk is
it all seems to be related. Yeah, exactly.
I love that.
Jason, hang on the line for 1 second. Don't leave us just yet. We're just going to go to break, okay?
Sure.
All right, who we got coming up here?
Oh, yes. Coming up next, of course, Stanton T. Friedman.
Yeah.
Again.
Yeah.
I am so excited. It's been way too long. As a matter of fact, the last time we talked to him, I think I said, I will see you in Roswell at the UFO festival. And I did. But all I did was I said hi. I didn't even identify myself.
You were supposed to stalk.
I was supposed to stalk him, but yes.
Haven't I taught you anything?
I will learn. I'll go back. I'll keep doing it right.
Why don't you give him a refresher course on the
break? Stalking is so easy.
Thank you, Jason. Coming up next, Stanton T. Friedman on Ghostly Talk.
Ghostly Talk!
Station 3.0. Thank you for your service.